this is not your first such debate. If people scan the internet, if you go to YouTube, you can see you talking with different people, whether it be on CNN, Stephen Colbert, Fox and Friends. What is it like to get up and talk about drug policy in front of an audience with an adversary who doesn't agree with you on most, if any, points 10 feet away from you?
It's a lot of fun. I mean, the truth is the work that I've been doing for all these years, which is trying to educate my fellow citizens about the war on drugs and about the many harms that it's doing in this country and around the world, how it's not really accomplishing what we wanted to do in terms of reducing drug abuse or reducing crime, and also to be active in trying to change these laws. I mean, because a lot of what my organization does, the Drug Policy Alliance, we're the leading organization in the country promoting alternatives to the war on drugs and having more and more victories. So the opportunity to get up, whether it's on TV or whether it's, you know, at the University of Arkansas later on this evening to debate people who've been involved in the drug war, it's a pleasure. And I have to say it's relatively easy, because there's so much wrong with the war on drugs. I mean, the notion of locking up 500,000 of our fellow citizens tonight for nothing more than buying or selling or using these drugs, oftentimes in the absence of any harm to anybody else. The notion of spending $50 to $100 billion a year on the war on drugs when the country's got massive deficit problems. The harm that we're doing in Mexico and Colombia and the Caribbean, West Africa, we're all – it's like alcohol prohibition times 50. Right? So it's a relatively easy argument to make, and I think when people hear it, typically my reaction is that people get moved over to being much more questioning about the current strategy.
In the more than a decade that you've been involved in these public debates and televised debates, have questions changed? Has the conversation changed at all?
What's shifting is that the opposition, by and large, is becoming a little less extreme. I mean, when I got going in this initially, I used to be a professor at Princeton University and started speaking out about this. And there was a real fanaticism back in the late 80s and early 90s around this war on drugs. I mean, people were talking about shooting people who use drugs. You had the police chief of Los Angeles, Daryl Gates, saying, let's execute people. The drugs are calling for executing people. You had members of a Congress and state legislatures saying, spend any amount of money. It doesn't make any difference. Let's bankrupt the schools. Let's bankrupt healthcare in order to wage this war on drugs. You don't hear that much anymore. I think even among the people who are committed to the drug war, there's more and more of a recognition that drug addiction has to be treated as a health issue. There's more and more support for things like making marijuana legally available for medical purposes. The marijuana debate's evolving in remarkable ways. Public opinion is shifting so fast. So you don't get as much of the silly arguments from the other side as you used to get.
When you talk about alternatives to the drug war, drugs is a very broad term. This can go from cannabis to methamphetamines,
to alcohol, to tobacco, to pharmaceuticals, exactly. And what I would say is that there are certain principles that hold in common across all drugs, but that when it comes to the public policies involved in regulating these drugs, they have to vary. So I would say that on the one hand, I don't think that anybody should be going to jail or prison. Not only anybody should be losing their freedom simply for what they put in their body. I mean, you know, so if you happen to take alcohol or methamphetamine or marijuana or a pharmaceutical drug that was not prescribed to you, I don't think anybody should go to prison or jail. I think it's a foolish and crazy waste of resources, and I think it typically does more harm to the individual concerned than it does to than the drug use itself. When it comes to regulating drugs, well, just as we have different policies with respect to alcohol and cigarettes and pharmaceuticals, so we would need different policies with respect to marijuana and heroin and methamphetamine. I am not an advocate for treating methamphetamine and cocaine the same way we do alcohol and cigarettes, but I do think that marijuana is a good candidate for removing from the prohibition system and treating a lot more like alcohol or cigarettes.
I would assume that Your desire not to have anyone to go to jail for using these drugs would end if they are operating an airplane.
Of course.
Or bus or-
I mean, my view is if you're driving under the influence of drugs, if you're high, if you're stoned, whatever it might be, you deserve to be punished. I mean, let's be clear. Or if you're in the workplace operating heavy machinery, or you're in the influence of drugs and putting other people at risk, you deserve to be punished. What I don't like is what I see the Drug Czar's office doing right now, which is pushing these laws, for example, about driving under the influence of marijuana, where somebody who smoked marijuana on a Friday and is totally straight by Saturday morning can still be arrested on a Monday morning, totally straight, and punished the same as a drunk driver, simply because if you test their blood, you'll see some evidence that they used marijuana 3 days ago.
Because so, THC stays in the blood system.
Right. It stays in the bloodstream, but has no impact on the brain, no impact on one's capacity. There's no evidence that smoking marijuana on a Friday affects your driving ability on a Saturday, much less a Monday. So that's, I think, what you see the drug warriors trying to do in a sort of sneaky way, you know, trying to use the antipathy about drugs to try to put innocent, truly innocent people away. I also think, by the way, that when it comes to accidents on the road, we do have to keep in mind that the problems involve not just alcohol and not just some of the illegal drugs. They also involve things like pharmaceutical drugs. They also involve things like fatigue. You know, many people, I think the second leading cause of auto fatalities after alcohol is fatigue. So let's be clear that I'm concerned first and foremost not about drug use per se. I'm concerned first and foremost about safety on the roads, safety in the workplace, and the safety of our kids.
You make marijuana legal to people 21 and over.
Mm-hmm.
More people.
Well, let me just correct you, Kyle. I would actually make marijuana legal for 18 and over. I just think that when we look at the polling, I mean, you know, there's going to be some ballot initiatives. California came very close last year, much closer than people expected, to legalizing marijuana. Got 46.5% of the vote, got more votes, the ballot initiative in California, than any of the Republican candidates for office, including Meg Whitman and Carly Fiorina, who spent zillions of dollars on their campaign. We're going to see these sorts of initiatives in Washington State and Colorado in 2012 and all likelihood. I think, properly speaking, that the age limit should be more like 18. I'd say the same thing for alcohol, for that matter. But I think the public the 5 or 10% of the public who's on the fence about whether to legalize marijuana or not, they get uncomfortable around this age issue. So, yeah, I would say make it lower if we can, but let's say 21 in the foreseeable future.
Safe to assume that if marijuana is legal for people 18, 19, 20, 21 and old, marijuana use will go up?
Well, I think that among young people, it's not going to go up because for simple reason. There are now three surveys in which high school juniors or seniors say it's easier to buy marijuana than it is to buy alcohol. Right. I mean, there are no active markets in high schools to sell booze, right, because people can, you know, get it elsewhere. But in when it comes to marijuana, you know, in every high school in America, more or less, if you ask young people, can you get marijuana easily, routinely 80% say, no problem, I can get it. Right. I think it is the case that more people who are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s will use marijuana. I think some of them, that will be a positive thing in their life because marijuana actually enhances people's lives. It's got medical benefits. And for some people, it's just a positive thing the same way they like alcohol or something else. For other people, it'll be a problem because marijuana can be an addictive drug. I think many of us have seen people who've gotten addicted to marijuana. The addiction's not as bad as getting addicted to alcohol or cigarettes or pharmaceuticals, but still, it's an addiction and it's a problem. I think we might see some substitution. I think there are people, there's evidence that when you make marijuana available, there may be less use of pharmaceuticals. For many people, they will consume less alcohol instead, and they'll take marijuana instead. And for many people, given that alcohol is far more harmful to the human body than is marijuana for most people. So I think, we would see more use. There would be some problems with that. I think there would be some benefits. I don't think in the end it would actually make all that much difference. I mean, the truth is, I think if you made marijuana legal in this country, if you responsibly regulated it and taxed it, you'd see more people using it. And I think, you know, 10 years down the road, people would be scratching their heads and going, why exactly do we keep this stuff illegal for almost a century? Why do we even do that in the first place?
When I hear that statistic about how easy it is for high school students to get marijuana, there's got to be something done to try to make it harder for 16, 17-year-olds to be able to get marijuana. I don't want my son or daughter in first hour or fifth hour.
Yeah, I think it's a natural reaction for all of us who are parents. You know, my daughter's now 23, and so I went through all of this as well, and my friends as well. And what I would say is we all start off with a desire, oh, my God, if we could only make marijuana less available, we could only build a moat, right, between our children and those drugs, wouldn't that be wonderful? But what we've seen is decades of evidence indicating that it's simply not possible. What's interesting is if you look at drug policy and marijuana policy over the last 40 years, years, and you'll see that the war on drugs gets very excited in the late 80s and dies down and gets excited again. You'll see that the number of people who are arresting keeps going up. You'll see that, you know, levels of marijuana use go up and down. But you know what stays constant is that question where they ask people, is it easy to get marijuana? Consistently for the last 40 years, roughly 80% of high school juniors and seniors say it's easy to get. So I think the real answer with young people, it's not about trying to build a moat, because I think we've learned that that moat is not possible. What it is about honest and accurate drug education. It's about focusing on keeping our young people safe. It's about discouraging the use of marijuana, especially when children are young. I mean, most of us freak out if we see a kid who's 11 or 12 or 13 smoking marijuana. But for a whole generation of parents today, half of whom smoked marijuana when we ourselves were young, well, when you see your 17 or 18-year-old and they're going to a party on the weekend and you know that there may be somebody, you know, circulating a joint or there may be a lot of drinking, I think most parents who have experience with alcohol and marijuana feel a little less nervous about a party where there's a joint than they feel about a party where there's alcohol. They're more worried about the arrest. But in terms of their kids dying on the road, getting involved in reckless sexual behavior, the evidence is powerful, and parents know from firsthand experience that alcohol is the more dangerous drug than marijuana for young people.
About 11 years ago, you and Asa Hutchinson were on CNN. Asa Hutchinson will be across the dais from you today. Are you interested to see how this will differ? Do you remember that televised?
Well, you know, what I remember, Kyle, is it was a funny thing. It must have been in the late 90s or around 2000 on that TV show that's all around. Was it Crossfire?
Crossfire. Yeah.
It was a debate show. And somehow I landed up debating Asa Hutchinson, a fellow named John Walters, and John Ashcroft. And within a year of my debating them, the three of them had become the head of the DEA, the drug czar, and the head of the Justice Department. So it was a weird lineup. My guess is that they have all evolved in their position somewhat. I know John Walters did. Asa Hutchinson, to his credit, was one of the first people who was a high-level drug war guy to actually come out for reforming the federal laws involving the penalties for crack cocaine. I think he saw that these penalties were being enforced in a way that was really unjust in racial terms, that everywhere you look, black people were getting slammed with 10- and 20-year mandatory minimum penalties for committing acts that were no different than white people. So Asa Hutchinson did step out early, and I admire him for that.